Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of NatureNow at kptz.org.
Well, hello and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans. My guest today is Sarah Spaeth. Sarah is the Director of Conservation and Strategic Partnerships at the Jefferson Land Trust. Sarah is also a keen wildlife tracker. With Sarah, we'll be taking a dive into the art and science of reading the landscape through wildlife tracking. We'll be talking together about how an informed and curious observer can learn about the other lives that inhabit our landscape. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. So a little bit of a hint. You would probably hear these sounds mostly at night, and you may never actually see the critter, but you may if you pay attention to its signs of passing through the landscape. Many listeners know of Sarah Spaeth from her long and outstanding work with the Jefferson Land Trust, but today we'll be talking with Sarah about one of her other interests and probably passions, wildlife tracking. So Sarah, the first thing I want to ask is, I know you've not been wildlife tracking all your life. What first captivated you about tracking and learning more?
Well, you know, Nan, in my job as the conservation director with the Land Trust, and over all these years that I've been working for the Land Trust, I've been helping to preserve really important wildlife habitat. Mm-hmm. On the Duckabush River and Chimicum Creek and other parts of Jefferson County, and spending my time writing grants and negotiating with landowners and acquiring these lands, which I knew had wildlife species that use them, but I didn't really know. And I was first exposed to this concept of wildlife track and sign when the Land Trust hosted a presentation and a tracking evaluation by David Moskowitz, who is a biologist, mm-hmm. and written the book Wildlife of the Pacific Northwest. And Dave had come out to share his knowledge and passion for wildlife tracking, and I attended his evaluation down on the Land Trust's Duckabush Preserve. And it was like having a light shone on this incredible, rich alphabet. And I really like that analogy, that the tracks and sign that animals leave behind is the first alphabet that we as humans had to know how to read and interpret.
Wow, that's a really interesting perception.
Eh? I thought so. And it came alive for me that day. And I was really surprised at how rich the sign and the evidence of these animals is on the landscape, that really we're so oblivious to all the creatures that we share this planet with. And yet they are in our backyard, and they are here, and they are not always thriving, but they're here, and that we do share this place with them. And so it was so relevant to my work with the Land Trust to understand the presence of these animals, and it made it even more relevant, the work that the Land Trust does and that our landowner partners do.
You talked about tracking, and you also talked about signing. You'll have to tell me what kinds of signs there are, but before we kind of get into that level of detail, what can these clues tell us about the workings of the natural world?
Well, there's something called the six arts of tracking, and it's the who, the what, the when, the why, the where, and the how. And as you look for and discover the tracks and sign of these animals, it's really not just about who's present, but why are they there? What are they doing there? How do they get there? How are they moving across the landscape? Are they moving quickly? Are they stopping to sniff and look for food? Or it's really the whole story. And you used a really appropriate word, which is the mystery. It's the mystery of what's happening to these animals and why are they transiting across land trust land or across your backyard. So it becomes, as you start to get into solving this mystery, you're really learning about animal behavior. And that's just fascinating to me.
So help me make this even more real in my mind by telling me a story or conjuring up as if we were in, I don't know, on the duck a bush and we saw something. How do you go about figuring out the who, what, when, why, where, and how?
Well, we have some tracking elders, and it used to be that our elders were really the tribal elders who would teach their children and grandchildren how to read this alphabet. Now we have books that can be really helpful in educating us as to what evidence the animals leave behind, but also what they're doing and how they're doing it. And there's a whole host of resources that are really helpful to kind of start you on this journey of solving the mysteries.
What do you then look for in terms of some of those other questions you were asking? How old is it? Or what are they doing? Or how are they behaving in this habitat? Mm-hmm. What are you looking for?
Well, for example, yesterday down on the Dosey Wallops, we were down on the riverbed, and one of the first questions that was asked was about this track, and it looked like some sort of ungulate or cervid, which would be a deer or an elk. And there you're looking at the size, and it looks big. It's too big for a deer, so it's very probably an elk. And it looked fresh. You can kind of tell the when by starting to understand what a fresh track looks like, depending on the substrate or whether there's, you know, evidence of rain having fallen on that track. And so it looked fresh, which to me was interesting because a month and a half ago, I was hiking up the Duckabush River, and the Duckabush elk herd was way up high in La Crosse Basin, which is the top of the watershed in the Duckabush. And that's a very typical time of the year that you'll find mm-hmm. elk high in the watershed. Mm-hmm. They're grazing up there, but they come down to the lowlands in the fall for the rut to find mate. And so I was intrigued to find the elk herd or evidence of the elk herd down low on the Dosey Wallops River. So the fall has come, and that means that the bucks have their racks on and they're starting to leave sign on the trees where they're scratching the trees with their antlers to leave smell and scent mark so that the females know that they're there and ready. And
so you could see that sign when you were out this weekend?
Yes, we did. We saw fresh antler rubs on trees, and you'll see a lot of the bark kind of scratched and fraying both at the top and bottom. And then we also saw what are called incisor marks, where they take their bottom incisors, and they don't have any incisors on the top. So they take their incisors that are on their jaw, on their lower mandible, and they scrape up and they mark on the tree. And they also cambium feed on the tree. It's like a vitamin for them. They're feeding on the inner cambium of like an alder tree mm-hmm. or a willow tree. So we saw a lot of that fresh sign. And then we walk a little bit further up the river, and there is the whole herd. And we can see the big bulls lying down on the sand. And when they got up, you could see this perfect print of their body in the sand and where they had rested. And so we were able to kind of break that down as the day went on and see what that looked like.
So, and that sort of tells me that the fact that you could recognize the track, gauge that it was relatively new, see the signs, I sort of have the feeling that you could open a door to now look for something that you might otherwise not have seen.
Yes. And, you know, many people, the end goal of learning how to read the landscape or the mysteries that the animal has left behind is to actually see the animal. And I think that that is a wonderful thing, but I also just enjoy learning how to solve the mystery with what they leave behind. Another thing that fascinates me about it is that it is this incredible combination of using your technical understanding of the animal, you know, the morphology of their foot, the animal behavior that you learn about by reading the books or learning from experts. But it's also using all of these kind of innate skills. When we're out in the wild, we're using our full senses. We're using our peripheral vision, or sometimes they call it owl eyes. And we're smelling things. Like yesterday, I put my nose right down in that elk bed, and I could actually smell the elk odor. And that helped confirm for me that it was an elk bed. And you'll even smell that when you're walking through the woods and the elk have been there recently. You can catch that smell. So you're using all of these senses that we don't always use very frequently. And that's also just a wonderful practice that I didn't expect when I first started wildlife tracking.
Can you tell me maybe a favorite story of where you actually didn't see the animal, but you put together the bits and pieces and were then able to imagine who it was and what it might have been doing?
Yes. I was with the Wilderness Awareness School's wildlife tracking intensive course that I have taken for a number of years as a student. It's a 9-month field study course, and then also been a teacher's assistant for it. And we were over in Umtanum Canyon, which is south of Ellensburg and a little bit northwest of Yakima. And it's beautiful, kind of open hills with sage and sort of brush. And we had hiked up this long, steep hill. And we got up to the top and we were actually trying to trail deer. So this is where you're actually putting together your skill set to follow the tracks of a specific animal to see if you can get to a point where you can see it. And we had broken into different groups and we were following this track of one deer, and we got up to the top and decided to take a lunch break. And the other group had come up from behind and they said, "You guys, you have to come over here and see this thing." So we wandered a little bit further into the brush, and there on the ground was a lot of scuff marks and some drops of blood and bits of fur. And then we started to look closely and we could see these big tracks, probably 3.5 inches across, very circular. And then some were a little bit smaller than that, and they looked a bit like a house cat, only much bigger. And then we start to see a drag mark going downhill through the dirt, probably a couple of hundred feet, and more fur in clumps and more blood, and both these large tracks and these smaller tracks following. And we followed that down the hill, and then we got to a deer carcass that had been partially fed on and buried, not completely, but you could still see parts of it. And around there were these lays in the grass where the animal that had killed this deer had fed and then rested afterwards. And so this was the story of a female cougar killing a white-tailed deer. She had laid in wait. You could see where she'd rested behind a sage bush, and then pounced on this deer and killed it and dragged it down the hill. And she and her cubs had a feast and then had rested and then had taken off. It was all there in the dirt. And it was fascinating to break that down. And then what I've learned since then is that cougar are actually kind of keystone species in that their kills feed so many other animals, not just the cougar family themselves, but bear will feed on cougar kills. Wolves will feed on cougar kills. Deer mice will feed on cougar kills. Mm. So the trophic cascade that happens from cougar in our landscape is significant. That was one of the most impressive stories unveiled on the landscape.
Yeah, that's to me almost like creating my own special wildlife film in my mind as you were telling that story, just from descriptions rather than from watching something. That was wonderful. Wow. I am so just respectful and amazed about the knowledge and the, and the sensitivity and the imagination and just the artistry that seems to take. In our remaining time, let me ask, if someone is interested in learning about tracking, do you need special knowledge before you even start, or how do you go about it? You did mention a couple resources, but sort of the how would you go about it kinds of question, if you've gotten someone's imagination now.
I mentioned the elders. There are a number of ways of accessing elders, and certainly there are programs that, if people are really interested in the exposure to these skills, Cedar Root School locally has a wildlife tracking course. In fact, I had the great fortune of teaching it last fall, and I hope once we're through with this pandemic, I'll be able to do it again. There is the Wilderness Awareness School over in Duval that has this 9-month tracking course that I mentioned. That's the tracking intensive. I think if someone just wants to dabble their toes and get a sense of what it's about, I would recommend David Moskowitz's book, Wildlife of the Pacific Northwest, as one resource. And then Mark Elbrock, Mammals of North America.
Spell the last name.
Elbrock. Mark Elbrock is a cougar biologist who now lives on the Olympic Peninsula and works for an organization called Panthera. And he has a study of cougars that's ongoing now with all of the tribes on the peninsula. And they're trying to understand the dispersal of cougar and how well they're doing based on kind of a shrinking geographic area and inability to expand beyond that because of human infrastructure. Mm. They're doing a very extensive study. And not only is the study extensive, but Mark's the literature that Mark has put out on track and sign and animal behavior is amazing. And so Mark Elbrock, if people are interested in any of his books on animal skulls, bird track and sign, mammal track and sign, animal behavior, excellent, very detailed resources.
Also sort of inferring from your story that just spending a lot of time out in the wild with elders or teachers is how you absorb the not only the knowledge, but sort of the sensitivity to see what you're looking at. Sometimes we have a hard time seeing what we're looking at.
True. And I think that there are ways to do that on your own, too. And there's the concept, as many of the listeners may know, of the sit spot. Mm-hmm. That we can find a place, you know, on our property or nearby where you can sit on a regular occurrence and just sink into that place and open your senses, listen for sounds and watch and just become really familiar with that place. And I think that exercise really starts to flex your senses and heightens your ability to then see changes and see different patterns on the landscape and get a sense of who might be there. And so that's a great introduction for people, is just to do that. And then wherever you are, start to look for little things that you might, you know, otherwise have just sort of passed by. Like, you know, scat is one of the things that people sometimes cringe a little bit, but scat can tell you so much about an animal, what it's feeding on. And oftentimes where it's placed is a communication tool that the animal uses. So coyotes, you'll notice, often poop right in the middle of a trail. And they're using that as a communication tool.
Yeah.
So that, and marks on trees, you know, is it a deer rubbing their antlers, and they're not rubbing it to get off that soft velvet coating. That's what often people have thought, but they're really using it as a tool to scent mark and communicate to other deer that they're there. Uh-huh. Same with bears will mark trees, elk will mark trees.
Fascinating. You know, the more experience I have with the out of doors, the more truth there is to the just keep looking and you'll see more and understand more and take the time and open yourself up to it. So, Sarah, I want to thank you so much. This has been really interesting. I'm thinking, gosh, maybe you'll let me go out with you sometime. But again, thanks so much for talking about the art and the science of wildlife tracking and learning about the world around us that we may have overlooked.
Well, thank you, Nan. And I just in closing want to just impart my passion, but I also just think that we live in an incredible rich part of the world. And I think it's really important that we understand who we share this place with and that we can do it in a way that honors their presence here as well.
Thank you. And thank you for that thought.
You're welcome.
So I have one piece of really good news to share, and that's regarding the southern resident killer whales. Members of the J, L, and K pods have been regular visitors in nearby Salish Sea waters during late September and early October. The Orca Network has been posting spectacular photos of orcas breaching, splashing, tail slapping, and sky hopping. And there have been lots of activities around Kingston, in Admiralty Inlet, and near Whidbey Island. The best news of all is that there are now two babies this fall. J41 Eclipse is the newest mother. She joins Talequa, so that there now are two babies. We will wish them well. So a quick note about finding things to celebrate. As you might have seen in recent articles in the newspaper, do plan a walk in the Chinese Gardens at Fort Worden and discover the garden's interpretive trail, which officially opened on September 26. The interpretive trail includes both natural and cultural history expressed and illustrated by five panels along the trail. The panels share the human story of the area as well as its rich biodiversity, resulting from the overlapping of several different ecosystems. I can tell you, I have found three of the panels, need to find two more, and they're really quite enjoyable and very, very nicely done. So let's see, let's hear that mystery sound again. Those were the sounds of the bobcat. One well-known sound, of course, is a bobcat caterwauling, which is a long-distance call to bring bobcats together for mating, and those calls can be heard at least a mile away. Bobcats make the full range of sounds made by most cats, including hissings, yowling, growling, gurgling, chattering, and even purring. According to the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, bobcats are found throughout all of Washington, and they're probably more common than people realize. They appear to be using suburban and rural residential settings more often, although due to their reclusive ways, one's not likely to see them, although I did see a picture this last year taken by a friend who lives down near Cala Point. Bobcats are various shades of buff and brown with dark brown or black stripes, and some have spots, and the tip of the bobbed tail and the backs of the ears are black. They have short ear tufts and ruffs of hair on the side of the head, giving the appearance of sideburns. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petridge. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays after the community resources calendar with repeats. Actually, usually on Thursdays, but this week we'll be hearing the League of Women Voters discussion with our county commissioner candidates. But the show will repeat on Saturday at 12:30. Recent podcasts are, of course, also available on the website. And in roaming around the internet looking for some ending music, I found this delightfully rhythmic theme song of a charity in West Bengal called Anub Hub, and it works to improve the health and education of poor families. The ending music is their theme song, which is dedicated fully to the love and protection of wildlife. The song was released in 2017 with the music direction of Joy Sarkar.
ভিড়ের মধ্যে অন্যরকম বাঞ্ছা, দাওয়া চৌকাঠ গেরস্থালির কাঞ্ছা,
ভেঙে ভেসে যাও মেহগনির দূরে, জংলা আদিম সবুজ সমুদ্রে,
ভূখণ্ড পায়ে আকাশ মাথায় বেঁধে, চল না হারাই পথ হারানোর জেরে।
যে পাতা পায় পায় ঝরা টুপটাপ শিশিরের আয়নায়,
খুঁজে নিও তুমি অন্যরকম চোখ, এই গহনে দুজনের দেখা হোক,
ভূখণ্ড পায় আকাশ মাথায় বেঁধে, চল না হারাই পথ হারানোর জেরে।
ভিড়ের মধ্যে অন্যরকম বাঞ্ছা,
ভেঙে ভেসে যাও মেহগনির দূরে, জঙ্গলা আদি সবুজ সমুদ্রে,
ভূখণ্ড পায়ে আকাশ মাথায় বেঁধে, চল না হারাই পথ হারানো।